Hare Krishna everyone. Today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam chapter 11. It's a new chapter we are beginning today. The chapter is titled as Jad Bharat Instructs King Rahuguna. Jad Bharat Instructs King Rahuguna. Our focus will be on the first verse, text 1.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Brahmano vacha. Akovida kovida vada vadan. Akovida kovida vada vadan. Vadasyatho nati vidam varishtha. Vadasyatho nati vidam varishtha. Nasurayo hi vyavaharam enam. Nasurayo hi vyavaharam enam. Tatvavamarshena sahamananti. Tatvavamarshena sahamananti. Brahmano vacha. Akovida kovida vada vadan. Vadasyatho nati vidam varishtha. Nasurayo hi vyavaharamenam. Tatvavamarshena sahamananti. Brahmano vacha. Akovida kovida vada vadan. Vadasyatho nati vidam varishtha. Nasurayo hi vyavaharamenam. Tatvavamarshena sahamananti. Brahmano vacha.
The Brahmana said, Akovidaha, without having experience, Kovida vada vadan, words used by experienced persons, Vadasi, you are speaking. Atho, therefore, na, not. Atividam, of those who are very experienced. Varishtaha, the most important. Na, not. Surayaha, such intelligent persons. He, indeed. Vyavaharam, mundane and social behavior. Enam, this, tattva, of the truth. Avamarshena, fine judgment by intelligence. Saha, with. Amananti, discuss. Translation. The Brahman, Jad Bharat, said, my dear king, although you are not at all experienced, my dear king, although you are not at all experienced, you are trying to speak like a very experienced man. Although you are not very experienced, you are trying to speak like a very experienced man. Consequently, you cannot be considered an experienced person. An experienced person does not speak the way you are speaking about the relationship between a master and a servant or about material pains and pleasures. These are simply external activities. Any advanced, experienced man, considering the absolute truth, does not talk in this way. Purport. Here there is some chastisement going on. Some heavy words. So, let's read the purport. By Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Krishna similarly chastised Arjun. Asochyan anvasochas tam prajnyavadam cha bhashase. While speaking learned words, you are lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. Bhagavad Gita 2.11. Similarly, among people in general, 99.9% try to talk like experienced advisors, but they are actually devoid of spiritual knowledge and are therefore like inexperienced children speaking nonsensically. Consequently, their words cannot be given any importance. One has to learn from Krishna or his devotee. If one speaks on the basis of this experience, that is, on the basis of spiritual knowledge, one's words are valuable. At the present moment, the entire world is full of foolish people. Bhagavad Gita describes these people as mudhas. They are trying to rule human society, but because they are devoid of spiritual knowledge, the entire world is in a chaotic condition. To be released from these miserable conditions, one has to become Krishna conscious and take lessons from an exalted personality like Jadbharat, Lord Krishna and Kapila Dev. That is the only way to solve the problems of material life. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatam Maham Vande Sri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Akovida kovida vada vadan vadasyatho nati vidam varishtah na surayo hi vyavahara menam tatvava marshena sahamananti. The Brahman Jadbharat said, my dear king, although you are not at all experienced, you are trying to speak like a very experienced man. Consequently, you cannot be considered an experienced person. An experienced person does not speak the way you are speaking about the relationship between a master and a servant or about material pains and pleasures. These are simply external activities. An advanced, experienced man, considering the absolute truth, that does not speak in this way. So, today we are beginning a new chapter. Up until now, very quickly, Maharaj Bharat was performing austerities away from the devotees in a forest, in a secluded place. We have been advised not to do that by Srila Prabhupada. Bhakti has to be done in the association of devotees. Else, even from the bhava platform, one can fall down. So that is one lesson we got. Maharaj Raguna, because of his attachment to a deer, had to take another birth, even from the bhava platform, to perfect his life. So he was in the hermitage. But fortunately, as a deer, he was at least in the association of sadhus. And then from there, the next lifetime of his was Jad Bharat. Jad Bharat, since his very childhood, was like an avadut. Avadut means non-conformist in society. Very different to the common man. Strange behavior, strange dressing. Everything about him was very different from to a conventional person in society. So he was born as an avadut. His parents tried to teach him the Vedas and other scriptures, but he was not interested because he was in spontaneous love of Godhead. He had nothing to do with this material world. He had nothing to do with his family members, nothing to do with anything of this world. He was always in Nitya Smaran of the Lord. Of course, the people around him could not understand him at all because they thought that he was very strange. And he was unconventional. So they rejected him. Not only did they reject him, but they also ill-treated him. They did not used to give him even proper food. They made him stand like a scarecrow, you know, in the fields, to protect the fields. And in that process, some dacoits also tried to kill him. They wanted to offer him as an offering to Goddess Kali. Okay, but because he was a devotee, Goddess Kali ended up killing the people who were trying to offer him. So that way Lord Krishna protected him. Then one day, as he was walking, he saw, you know, he was holding a palanquin inside which there was a great king, Maharaja Rahuguna, was sitting inside. And as the palanquin was going, as they were carrying the palanquin, Jad Bharat was also carrying, you know, on one side. Jad Bharat was jumping from one side to the other side because he was careful not to set his foot on any other living entity, and he was always in smaran of the Lord. So in his ecstasy, he was carrying the palanquin. Obviously, the palanquin was not very balanced because of this. It was making, you know, there was odd movements happening to the palanquin, and just like a turbulence in a flight, our Maharaj Rahuguna experienced this turbulence because of, you know, Jad Bharat. So he was not comfortable inside. Okay, so he started sarcastically, you know, saying sarcastic words to Jad Bharat. Who is that fellow outside? Like that. So the sarcastic words of an ignorant person, of an ignorant fool, unto a very exalted personality who was carrying the palanquin. First of all, he should not have accepted service. But of course, it was not his fault because he didn't know who was carrying it. But then, you know, without totally understanding what's going on, he passed sarcastic comments to Jad Bharat. But when Jad Bharat started responding to him, he realized, hang on, now this man who was thus far not speaking, now he started speaking. So that is the theme of today's verse. And the intelligence of a person is known, or the realization or erudition or the devotion of a person is quite often only known when that person, you know, starts speaking. This is for the neophytes. Of course, advanced personalities, they can recognize advanced personalities even when they don't have to exchange any words. They will recognize. But for a common man, understands when they start speaking. So that's the theme. So Rahuguna hears from Jad Bharat, and suddenly he realizes, this is a very exalted personality I'm speaking to. This is not an ordinary person, right? Therefore, he develops reverence, a reverential attitude towards Jad Bharat. Whereas earlier he was having a very condescending attitude and a sarcastic attitude. So suddenly a change of mind, the moment Jad Bharat starts speaking. So what made the difference? The speech made all the difference. The talk, the vani of Jad Bharat took Maharaj Rahuguna from a platform of disdain or disrespect to a platform of awe and reverence. All that happened just because of what he spoke. And that is what Prabhupada is today laying a lot of focus on, our on speech. How speech can make a difference. So, Jad Bharat, having spoken whatever initially that he had to say, Maharaj Rahuguna is hearing, but because Maharaj Rahuguna is not a very advanced devotee, he's a good person, no doubt about it, he's pious, he's very receptive, but he's not very, he's not at a stage where he can just hear something from Rahuguna and understand the entirety of what Maharaj Rahuguna is trying to say, Jad Bharat is trying to say. Therefore, Maharaj Rahuguna is telling him that your statements appear to me as contradictory. That is what he mentioned in the, you know, earlier sections. Obviously, nothing is contradictory. In the realm of spiritual world, you know, all contradictions are reconciled in the scriptures, but we have to understand the scriptures thoroughly so that we are convinced that there are no contradictions. But Maharaj Rahuguna was not on that platform, so he used these kind of words, and therefore, in response,
Jadabharat is saying, my dear king, although you are not at all experienced, you are trying to speak like a very experienced man. It's almost like you are passing judgments on what is being spoken without thoroughly understanding, you know, how to reconcile these kind of statements that I am telling you. So that's the verse for today. So Srila Prabhupada gives again a very heavy purport for us today. So what is the key theme in this particular section, and what is Srila Prabhupada's mood in this purport? The advice is for all of us. Of course, the pastime is going on between Jadabharat and Rahuguna, but the advice is for all of us. We have been advised here not to speak without sufficient knowledge or without sufficient experience in any subject matter. If we start speaking like that, then eventually we will be found out. Right? And such speech that we offer to someone is not going to help anyone anyway. Because we don't have knowledge about that subject matter, neither we have any experience. And sometimes such speech will come back to harm us. Just like Prabhupada gives the example of the toad which keeps croaking, you know, making some sounds, and the snake is looking, a very nice sound. Now let me eat this fellow from behind. So unnecessarily exposing like that and causing harm to one's own self. Abraham Lincoln, the first president of the United States, once made a nice sentence. He said, better to remain silent and be thought of as a fool. Better to remain silent and be thought of as a fool. Some doubt is there. Maybe he's fool or maybe he's not. Than to speak and remove all doubt. Okay. Or another philosopher said, silence is the virtue of those people who are anyway not wise. So it's better such people remain silent. Okay. So this is the theme of what is going on today. Now there are many obvious examples of this, you know, in the material world. For example, many years back one politician in India was saying that if water is used for electricity, then there will be water scarcity. Obviously this person does not understand the principles of what hydraulics can do. He did not understand that if you use water for electricity, that water can come back again. No. So he said that if everything of all water is used for electricity, how come there will be water? And then everyone thought that, oh, what fool he is. No. He opened his mouth, that's the problem. If he would not have opened his mouth, then he would have been passed as intelligent. He became Pappu. Okay. All of you know what that is, right? So we should not try to become Pappu. Because if we open our mouths, then what happens? Then our ignorance is immediately revealed. So this is an example how a propaganda which is done without depth of knowledge in that particular subject matter can reveal one's ignorance or lack of wisdom. Now, so this is speaking with ignorance about something. Worse than that sometimes is taking decisions based on half knowledge in life. Now, all of you might have heard Radha Gopinath Prabhu's Science of Self-Realization. In that, what happened? There was this Muslim person who was very pious. He was going to the mosque. But suddenly one day he stopped going to the mosque. And then the fellow at the mosque, the head or whatever, he was saying, why this fellow, you know, is not coming nowadays? This Muhammad, he was such a nice devotee. He was coming to the mosque every week. So then he said, okay, I'll go and find out. So he went and asked Muhammad, why you are not coming to the mosque nowadays? He said that it is written in the Quran that a real Muslim will never enter the mosque. I said, how that is possible? Right? That cannot be written in the Quran like that. Then he said, show me where it is. And he said, see, show. Oh, yeah, it's written there actually. A real Muslim will never enter the mosque. But in the back, it was written, without washing his feet. Because this person has only read half knowledge. So decisions based on half knowledge, very, very dangerous. So therefore, without knowledge or with half knowledge, if we speak or if we take decisions, we ourselves will harm ourselves as well as we will misguide other people also on top of that. God knows how many people Muhammad preached to in the, you know, right? And then they stopped coming to the mosque because of that. Therefore, here we are being cautioned. Do not speak without sufficient knowledge and without sufficient experience. Now, in spiritual life within ISKCON also, we see this phenomenon. Especially in devotees who are new. We see this phenomenon. When we are new, you know, we suddenly have this love for preaching. Actually, it is not a love for preaching. Preaching is different. And the desire to unleash our newfound knowledge on some hapless customer. That is different. And the desire to preaching is completely different. This is called in by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls this in Madhurya Kadambini as utsahamai. You know, initial newfound enthusiasm. When you know some, you know, half knowledge. We catch some, in Hindi we say murgi pakad liya. You know, we catch some murgi and then tell you, oh, better. Now you listen to me now. I am telling you Bhagavad Gita sunata. You know, I will tell you all Bhagavad Gita now. You should sit and listen. Poor fellow is sitting there. You know, like that. So, what happens is, you know, especially, you know, these people are someone who is just confused and roaming around, you know, like that. And then we think that, okay, you know, let me catch this fellow. Because he seems a little bit receptive, sadhu type person. But he doesn't know anything. And let me, you know, impress him with my newfound knowledge. So sometimes, you know, we, in the initial stages, without adequately knowing the philosophy or knowing the correct verses, but not knowing when to speak those verses. Then we unleash this philosophy. For example, someone is lamenting, saying that my father or mother is in ICU in deathbed. And then you say, Dehino asmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jada. Why are you lamenting for something which is not worth lamenting? Now, if you go and tell someone who is already in misery, okay, someone's brother has had an accident in ICU struggling, say, do not lament for that which should not be lamented for. Philosophy is correct. But is that the time to tell that verse? Like that. Or someone is dead and then, you know, you're telling them he's not this body. No, why are all of you crying here? You know, what's going on here? Come on. Lift your game, everyone. No. So this is neophyte. Neophyte means not knowing when to speak, what to speak. Like that. So therefore, maturity has to come. Now, many times, you know, when we are new, you know, we come up with some standard answers. I remember someone who I know, you know, very well. That person, he had just studied, you know, Bhagavad Gita and started associating with devotees. So he had heard a word, surrender. So whenever someone used to go to him, he used to say, Prabhuji, just surrender. That's all. Surrender. Sharanagati karnega. Bas. Just surrender. And whenever someone asked him, any problem people used to come with, just surrender. And someone asked him, how to surrender? Okay, surrender, but what I should do? Police, at least when they say surrender, you know, we have to raise both our hands and sit in the car, they say, okay, that is surrender. But what to surrender, okay? So then when asked that question also, person, what this person will say? They will say, I told you not to take tension. Don't ask too many questions. Simply surrender, that's all. Is it not as simple as this? Just surrender, don't ask too many questions. So therefore, if you are given time and again this kind of advice, okay, what will happen? That person will run away next time he sees you, right? He's not going to come to you with any problem because you don't have anything to say except keeping on repeating like a parrot. Surrender, surrender, surrender. Surrender has got so many components, right? The first aspect of surrender, Prabhupada says, is associating with Sri Guru Pada Ashraya. So therefore, obviously, if this person himself had not taken Guru Pada Ashraya, but he was telling everyone else, surrender, surrender. On top of this, this person was saying, I have joined ISKCON. You know, I have surrendered to Krishna now. That was the next stage he went to. Surrender to Krishna. Like that. You also should surrender. Like that. Right? But surrender is very practical. Surrender is not a lip service. Like that. So therefore, without adequate knowledge, without adequate realization, one should not also start getting into advising other people on their problems. Just for the purpose of impressing them. Or sometimes when husband and wife are, you know, having a serious issue. Okay. Nicely, everything was going on after marriage. You know, husband cannot get along with wife, and wife cannot get along with husband. It happens many times. Even in devotional circles, we see. Sometimes there is some difference of opinion. So, if we go and say, why are you fighting like cats and dogs? You are husband and wife only in this lifetime. You have seen many, many wives. You have seen many, many husbands. No? So therefore, you should cultivate the quality of detachment between husband and wife. Get detached from one another. Go to the forest. Like that. If we advise all these things, then what is happening? It is just like that. You know, speaking like an inexperienced person. Right? And giving advice when you don't have any experience yourself. If that person starts and comes back and asks you, Prabhuji, when you have a fight with your wife, will you go to the forest? No, my case is different. No. Right? So do not speak to others. Do not advise others that which you don't want for yourself or you can't implement in your own life. Prabhuji, I told you, chant attentively all 16 rounds. How many years I have been telling you this? Are you chanting attentively 16 rounds, first of all? No, right? So therefore, this is speaking beyond one's experience, speaking one's beyond one's realizations. So humility also means that restricting our speech to the extent of what we know and what we have limitedly realized because of the mercy of senior devotees. So this point is, you know, this theme is coming here. Now, at least in the examples that we saw, at least one tolerable aspect was there in these examples. What was that? Though in all these incongruence that we saw, there was one tolerable aspect that at least a person who knew little bit something in Krishna consciousness was speaking, trying to preach to a neophyte who doesn't know anything. There is a worser case than this. There are worser fools than this in this world. The greater fools are those who in their newfound wisdom try to give spiritual advice to the spiritual master itself. That is even one level higher. In Tamil, we say, Tirupadi ke laddu kuduttan. Bhagavan Balaji ko wapas jaake laddu de diya usne. Whatever prasadam Balaji is giving, you give back to Balaji only that. No, you take this, that's too very tasty. Did you taste Tirupati laddu? Have you known like that? To Balaji Lord himself, Tirupati Lord himself. You go and give laddu back to that person. Like that, people going upward. This is called, in corporate parlance, we call it as reverse knowledge transition. Knowledge comes from top to bottom. Evam parampara praptam, that's the way it comes. But here, current is flowing reverse way. Like that. So, this is even more fools, foolish. And scriptures talk about that. One big example of that is Ramachandra Puri. Ramachandra Puri was a foolish disciple, right? He became so proud that he thought that he could advise Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should eat and how much Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should eat. He is directly advising the Lord himself. He is advising the sannyasi what they should eat and what they should not eat. So this is fool number one. Ramachandra Puri was such a fool also that he could not even fathom the exalted nature of his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri was an exalted personality. He was the Paramaguru of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, right? So, when Madhavendra Puri was enacting his disappearance pastimes, he was in separation from the Lord. So, he was saying, oh my Lord, I could not serve you properly in this lifetime. I am bedridden right now. Where is Mathura? Where is Vrindavan? He was, in that way, he was lamenting. And Ramachandra Puri went to him and said, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na Sochati na Kangshati. Why are you? Think of Brahman. When someone is Brahman realized, such a person does not lament. He is giving this to his own spiritual master. Obviously, you know, anybody who does that, blood pressure will go up. You know? Right? So, Madhavendra Puri said, take this fellow out of my vision right now. Keep him somewhere else now. What nonsense is he talking? Because, why? Because the mood of a Rasika Bhakta is, one of the characteristics of devotional life itself is Moksha Lagutakrit. What are the characteristics of devotional life? Klesha Agni. Relief from material distress, definitely. Then, Shubhada. Shubhada means all auspiciousness coming on the devotee. And another is Moksha Lagutakrit. A devotee derides the conception of liberation. A devotee has nothing to do with Brahman. Brahman is just a byproduct. Devotee never says that, okay, you know, let me merge into the Brahman. A devotee never seeks peace of mind. A pure devotee's only interest is in buying anxiety for serving the Lord. So when you go and give messages of peace of mind, of Brahman, to a Rasika Bhakta, then obviously there is some rasabhas that's happening here. So Ramachandra Puri did not understand the mood of his spiritual master. So he went and, you know, did reverse. No, he gave a very suboptimal knowledge because he knew that particular Brahman aspect to his spiritual master, and that didn't go well. So therefore, he got chastised by his spiritual master. So Madhavendra Puri said, get out from here. But such heavy chastisement, Prabhupada writes in that section, such heavy chastisement of a guru unto his disciple is actually very purifying for the disciple in the long run. And because such chastisement is not done out of material anger. It is not material anger which Madhavendra Puri was an exalted personality. He was completely outside the material concept of life. So, where is the question of material anger in him? It was not done out of material anger, nor was it done out of envy towards his disciple. But such chastisement the guru does out of deep concern for the disciple that after so many years of association also, this person is going towards the gutter. Therefore, this is the compassion or the concern of a spiritual master for a disciple. And such chastisement actually helps the disciple not to progress towards doomsday. Even that time, if the disciple comes back, then that is very rewarding for such a disciple. The spiritual master saving the disciple sometimes through heavy chastisement and heavy words. Now, here in this particular section now, we see that Jadabharat is also chastising Maharaj Raghuna, you know, in very heavy manner, calling him as inexperienced. What are you talking, you know? Here, when you speak, it looks as if someone inexperienced is speaking. Now, as we mentioned, why did Jadabharat speak like this? Because he thought that Maharaj Raghuna was not getting the message. Because Maharaj Raghuna said that your statements appear contradictory. Okay, so he was kind of, you know, passing a premature judgment without really getting into the depth or without getting the full facts of what Jadabharat was trying to speak to him. Many years back, in 2003, sometime when we were in Toronto, I was attending a home program when His Holiness Bhakti Brihat Bhagavat Swami, who is also earlier known as Brihat Mridanga Prabhu, he's a very, very scholarly person in ISKCON and very realized devotee, a sannyasi now. So he was speaking to an audience. Actually, what happened was one devotee, he had told him that, Prabhuji, my father is, you know, sorry, he said, my father is rascal, he said. He doesn't surrender, he doesn't accept, you know, anything. Okay, in spiritual life, he's got, you know, very less time on the planet. He's visiting Toronto. Maharaj, can you come home? We will invite you. But you give class such that my father, you know, kind of understands something, you know, like that. So Maharaj gave a class. Maharaj said, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. All the scriptures have unanimously declared this, including the Brahma Samhita, including the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ete cham shakala pumsha. He spoke that. He spoke Govinda Madhi Purusham, Ishvara Parama Krishna. And Maharaj laid down everything that we should understand from the authority of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, who is Bhagavan. And very nice class. And then this person, then questions. I said, yes. So he said, no, I don't have a question. And he was very strong with Maharaj. He said, I have a view. Okay. Who are we? Who are we? Humility means we should understand we are insignificant to decide who is God. That is how his interpretation of humility was. Okay. Who are we to decide who is God? Who are we to say Krishna is God, Rama is God, Durga is God? Who are we to say all these things? That is his argument. And then he says, let the truth unfold on its own. Different people are different. Let it unfold. Experience. Everyone has his own experience. For you, Durga is God. For you, Krishna is God. For you, Hanuman is God. For you, your next door neighbor may be God. Because he helped you at a time of need. He is God for you. So who are we to be judgmental? Very, very heavy. It looks very nice. Outside, if someone is saying, say, wow, what arguments. Beautiful arguments. Who are we? Yeah, true, very nice. Who are we? Be humble. Right? But the whole point is missed. The whole point has been missed here. It is just a kind of a poetic, apparently, you know, hollow philosophical argument that he's putting. But for a person who doesn't know anything, that person will be dumbstruck. Oh, what nice argument this person is putting. Right? Therefore, this is called as speaking like an inexperienced man. A fool trying to sing, you know, like Johnny Cash. You know, very, very, you know, high level of music. Trying to give from his mouth. Who doesn't know anything like that? So Srila Prabhupada therefore is advising us and cautioning us, do not waste your lifetime in putting pointless arguments to what scriptures have already concluded. What is the point? When we were studying in B school, we used to call it as dagma. Dagma means what? Desperate attention grabbing measures and actions. For example, this, you know, in college, when professor used to ask any doubts, suppose there's a course on business strategy, let us say, and then professor asks, any doubts? So this person has not understood anything, but he'll ask doubts. And then he'll ask some very, you know, impressive question, and he'll look at the girls, whether they are impressed with this question. You know? Okay, so then we used to say, oh, dagma, trying to impress with this question. You know? Some very, you know, high-level question without understanding any basics of what the professor is trying to speak. He wouldn't even know how to differentiate what is the difference between balance sheet and profit and loss account. But he will talk about how to turn around a company's financial fortunes, right? So this is the kind of question. This is called as dagma, desperate attention-grabbing measures and actions. By our questions, we are trying to just impress, that's all. We don't have any desire to get any answer to that. Okay, God knows whether he even heard answer to what professor said. Question puchana bas ho gaya. Everyone is happy. Everyone accepted my intelligence in this room. Like that. Okay. So Prabhupada says there is no point, you know, in having this kind of a mood in a class. So that's why it is said tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnana seveya. In a mood of humility, when genuinely we try to seek knowledge, then even if we don't understand what the spiritual master says, that mood itself will make us understand at least something. Out of 10 things, at least one thing will go into our head. Like that. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada is advising us, put all these pointless arguments aside, learn the truth by approaching a spiritually realized devotee, get some knowledge and practice that knowledge. When you practice that knowledge, the jnana becomes vijnana. What is the difference between jnana and vijnana? Jnana means knowledge. Vijnana means realized knowledge. Knowledge becomes realization only because of a struggle in our life where we take that knowledge and we struggle to put it into practice. When we struggle, we will feel very insignificant. That, look, this is high standard, I can't do it. Then we discuss with devotees, Prabhuji, I can't do this. I just can't chant attentively. My mind is going here and there. Which means at least you're trying to chant attentively. One who is not even trying to chant attentively will never have this question. How is your chanting? First class, Prabhuji, yeah. Sabere ho jata hai. 16 rounds over. Like that. But only when someone is chanting attentively, we'll have more questions about japa. How to sit in chanting. What to do before chanting so that chanting is attentive. So these are genuine questions. Like that. So when such questions are asked and then we struggle and then again we go and ask questions, again we struggle, again we go and ask, and gradually over a period of time that improvement is there. Bhakti is not like allopathy. Bhakti is like Ayurveda. It will slowly work. If you go to an Ayurvedic doctor, he said, what's the problem? Show an RD. Ah, okay. Okay, take this. Tomorrow first class, 24 hours. That person is not Ayurvedic doctor, first of all. You should say, okay, you are a rascal. It's not possible. Because this Ayurvedic process is a cleansing process which works slowly on the body. So you have to give it time to work. Okay. So any quick fixes means you know it is bogus. So there are no quick fixes in devotional life. So it has to be gradual. There is a struggle. Perfection is not going to be easy. It's a long struggle. Way back to Godhead is not so easy. So, and when we speak from our own spiritual realizations, rather than just based on bookish knowledge, then that kind of a speech will carry greater value. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu once, you know, he was mentioning in Mary Hall, he was saying that a message which is communicated from the level of intelligence will only go here at this level. It is only messages which are communicated from the heart will go and touch somebody's heart. And how can messages come from the heart? When we hear something in our heart. In the heart is realizations. Here is intellect. Here is realizations. So we speak from our heart. We speak based on our own realization. So therefore, Prabhupada is advising us to take lessons from such exalted personalities like Jad Bharat to solve the problems of material life. In Sydney, many years back, His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrit Maharaj was conducting a seminar on speech. Especially the focus was on austerity of speech. So he was quoting from Bhagavad Gita. What is austerity of speech? Austerity of speech has got several components. Speak that which is beneficial. Speak something which is pleasing to everyone. So there are various instructions that are given in the Bhagavad Gita. So he was speaking on that. And Maharaj said actually that if a person speaks less, when he says speaks less, Maharaj then clarified, what is austerity of speech? Austerity of speech means speaking only about Lord Krishna, not speaking any gramya katha. So if we control our tongue, and Arjun Sakha Prabhu was mentioning yesterday about the same point, no? He was speaking about Vaishnava aparad, how it can happen. Because we have a tendency, our tongue is loose. We let our tongue loose. It always hankers for some masala. In Gujarati we call panchat. We always want panchat. Okay, panchat means what? Gramya katha, gossip, right? So our tongue hankers for it. Okay, what is the latest news in the congregation? Who fell down? Who had fight with who? Right? So when we want this kind of a taste, what happens? Krishna will definitely give us that taste. He said, oh, you want this? Oh, I'll give you more of this. Don't worry. But if you want my katha, I will arrange for giving you that also. Choice is ours, right? So when these things becomes habits later on and we get a taste for hearing these kind of messages only, then our taste for Krishna will never come. Therefore, Maharaj was saying that when we speak also, we don't speak any gossip. We don't speak ill about other devotees. We don't speak any gossip. Recently, I was sharing it in the Bhakti Vaibhav class that, with Bhanu Maharaj, this Prabhuji had come. Ganga Prabhu. So Ganga Prabhu had come one day recently home. Ganga Prabhu was, I was asking Ganga Prabhu, because Ganga Prabhu is he has taken so many big responsibilities for ISKCON. Very, very senior responsibilities he has handled. The Prabhuji was from Italy. He said, I'm an Italian. He said, actually, I lived a very wild life. You know how Italians are, he said. And then he has spent years, I think 30, 40 years in Mayapur or something like that, taking on so many responsibilities. And then I was asking Ganga Prabhu how to improve, chanting. How to get the mood of proper mood in chanting as well as in doing any services. Okay, based on his experiences in life. And he was, almost for 1 hour, he was giving me very valuable advice on that day. So then he suddenly stopped and he said, I asked this to one devotee in ISKCON who is very well known for excellence in various services. Okay, be it singing, be it giving classes, be it doing big projects. This person has established, be it management. He has, in Tamil we call a Sagala Kalla Vallavan. He is good in everything that he takes. Sabme Mahir. And he said it was Gaurang Prabhu, okay, who he asked this question to. And Gaurang Prabhu, he said, gave me a very simple answer. He said, Prabhuji, whatever I believe that if at all I have had any effectiveness in ISKCON, there are only two principles that I follow. And these two principles are the basis of anything that I do in ISKCON. And when you do, and anyone does these two things, they can do great things in Prabhupada's movement. Not that he said he did anything great, but he said that you can then become very effective, genuinely effective in the movement. What are the two things? Chanting, I chant my rounds very, very attentively in the morning. Very, very attentively. That is one. Because that is the Shakti. That is the foundation of anything and everything in spiritual life. Anything and everything. Very, very attentively. Number two, I never talk ill about any devotee. I don't look down upon any devotee. Even though I may be doing big things. We may be doing something, but what happens when we start doing something which others don't do, we immediately have this tendency to look down upon others and to not respect them. So these two things. Chant rounds attentively, do not blaspheme any devotees. Just by doing this, tremendous amount of Krishna Shakti can come to achieve big things. So I thought that was very useful for me. So I thought I'll share it. I shared it in my Bhakti Vaibhav. I'm trying to share it here also. Very useful. Now, Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj also mentioned that when devotees control their tongue in this manner, use their tongue to vibrate the holy names very sincerely and hear the holy names and desist from talking ill about other devotees and only speak about Krishna Katha to everyone, or speaking pleasantly to others, using the tongue to glorify others all the time, that person will get Vaka Siddhi. Vaka Siddhi means what? Then such a person, whatever he speaks, what happens? That happens. Krishna makes it happen. That's why it is said, sometimes we go to very exalted personalities and we seek blessings from them. Because when they give blessings from their mouth, it will happen. Krishna will not. Krishna says, it is said that Lord is very partial, but devotees are very impartial. They give mercy to everyone. So even if Krishna does not want to give Krishna Bhakti, Krishna has to give Krishna Bhakti because devotee has recommended. Why? Because devotee has said, I bless you that you become a devotee. And Krishna says, okay, how can I go against this person? This is Vaka Siddhi. Vaka Siddhi is not like one of the mystic powers, the materialistic Siddhi. No, Vaka Siddhi is verily bestowed by Lord himself. In fact, in the 11th canto, this question comes up about Siddhis. So materialistic Siddhis are different from Siddhis which Krishna personally gives his devotees. Materialistic Siddhis can be acquired by persons who are even practicing Ashtanga Yoga. By dint of their own prowess, they get some materialistic Siddhis. But the Siddhis which devotee gets is personally given to them by Lord Krishna. So like that. So therefore, those Siddhis will always, when implemented on someone, will be beneficial for that person. So like that. Now, externally, Maharaj was saying at that time, I remember, externally says that people who are very exalted, externally they may appear to be very ordinary. But their words are very powerful. They externally they may appear ordinary and they may appear unconventional also. But because they appear ordinary and because they appear unconventional, it is easy for us to look down upon them and make offenses. Because we'll say, oh, I thought Maharaj means someone. I remember once when I was very new, you know, I was actually reading, you know, at that time, this was, I think, 1998 or something like that, you know, when I was reading, you know, when I was searching for the truth, you know, so-called whatever, okay. So I was reading Ramana Maharishi's books, okay, at that time, who said that, who are you? You must try to attain Brahman. So I was very, that was my actually, you know, beginning of understanding that I am not the body, I am the soul. After that, I came to Prabhupada's books because of the mercy of one of my friends. But that time, what happens was, I inadvertently asked a person in a Chinese restaurant at 12 o'clock in the night. I asked, you know, one another person. We both were working together. We were doing a consulting assignment and it was 12 o'clock in the night. Every day we used to come at 12 and eat in the Chinese restaurant. So there I asked, we are working so hard, what is the goal of life? I asked him. And that person was a Vaishnava actually. So he said, what did you ask? I said, what is the goal of life? Why are we working so hard in this life? So he said, very good question, he said. Now if someone comes and asks on the road, Prabhuji, I just wanted to ask, what is the goal of life? How will you feel? Are murga aagaya, pakdo. Who asks such a question in this world, right? So he also caught me. He said, sit down here, okay? You know. So he said, very nice question at 12 o'clock in the night you are asking. What is the goal of life? Apparently, he had a Vaishnava guru. So he went and, not from our sampradaya, he went and told that this boy is there, he's asking, who am I, what is the goal of life? He said, huh? Acha? Pula usko. So I want to meet him. So that guru was actually in Chennai. Okay, he's a very famous personality in Chennai. Okay, Vaishnava guru. And then he said, I want to see this boy who is asking this question. Okay, so he came to tour Ahmedabad, the holy dhams, Dwaraka and all that. So he said, when I, you know, just next week only he came incidentally. He said, I'm coming next week. You get this boy and I want this boy to sit next to my seat and travel with me throughout the yatra. Okay, and I will talk to this boy. Okay, then he said, guru is coming. I said, okay, theek hai, milta hu. Okay. And then this man took me, it was a Sunday morning, you know, and then he took me, he parked the car somewhere, and he told me, you go there and stand. So I went there and stood. Next to me was a person who was standing with some, you know, very ordinary looking person. And then he went somewhere else, okay. So then this person was standing like this on the road, alone. So I went and looked at him. He said, you know, he folded his hands and told me, you know, Hare Krishna. So, no, not Hare Krishna, he said, yeah, I think he said, something like that, Hare Krishna or something like that. I don't know how he greeted me, but it was some Lord's name, he said. Okay. Then I said, I shook my hand. I said, hello, Jagan. He said, oh, okay. He shook my hands. And then I told him that, I've succumbed to meet Guruji. So he said, okay. Then finally, my friend called me from far off. He said, you know, he bowed down to that personality and he said, you know, like that. Then he started walking with me and then I realized he was only Guruji. And then when I entered, I saw there were 20 buses full of pilgrims waiting like this. You know. And everyone paid Dandavat Pranam and I am standing with them and I just shook hands with them saying, hello, nice meeting you. Like that. And then he told me, you come with me upstairs. He said, and he was very compassionate to me. He said, Lakshmi Narayan, who my friend was, he said, Lakshmi told me, you have very nice questions. You come. Like that, upstairs. And then full day he took me. He took me to so many holy places. And then he was talking to me all the time. Like that. So therefore, I have no idea who this personality is because he was just standing in a very unassuming fashion. Okay. And I didn't know this person can be guru also. I thought guru means some big dadi has to be there. You know, he has to be, for me, my guru was in that Babaji, Alak Niranjan, tam 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 tam. I thought something like that guru means somebody has to be like that. Something vichitra he has to be, something strange. How can he be so ordinary, standing like these things, right? And when he starts speaking to me after that, the full day, then I realized, my goodness, this is something different. He answered so many questions of mine. He told me what is Brahman and all that for the first time. Of course, I pretended I understood. Little bit I understood. But not as much. But still I understood something. At least he told me, you're not the body. Okay, that much I understood on that day. Then I asked him, what should I... I told him after the end of the day, I asked him, in Kali Yuga, who is a Mahan? In this Kali Yuga, you know, who is someone who is really self-realized? And he said, Prabhupada. And I told him, and you know, obviously because I had a lot of familiarity with him, so I was speaking very freely with him. I said, yes, exactly. Even that friend of mine told me same thing, you know. He gave me books and all. You know. 2-3 years back, he told me, Hare Krishna Mahamantra, he asked me to chant. No? Can I chant? Then he looked at me. He said, Ippidi yellam kelvi kekka mudima? Like that. Which means what? Aisa sab sawal poochna, pooch sakta. Can you ask such a question? Can I chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra? Is this a question you are asking me? Like that. Very nicely he told me. He told me, of course you must chant. And then he pulled out a bead bag and gave me, this is what you should chant. And he said, you come and see me in Bombay when I come. And there also he told me, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Because they chant in the reverse way. Okay. He is engaged actually in spreading Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement in the villages of South India. That is his project. What Prabhupada did abroad. Like that. So this is an exalted personality. But we can't recognize such a personality. Because only when we come to some level, we will understand who they are. Right? So Prabhupada is, you know, telling us that unless we really surrender to these personalities with faith and hear, we will not even understand how great they are. And therefore, we will only be arguing with them on mundane platform. Now, as we progress in devotional life, we will understand the substance behind such personalities. Such personalities, you know, they are externally, their form may not be what we think, you know, in our definition of what is a guru. So, in our immaturity, we usually tend to give more weightage to form over substance, to externals over the substance which a man carries, or a personality carries. But Srimad Bhagavatam at the very outset, you know, at the very beginning, it says in the second verse, dharmo projito kaitavo nirmat saranam satam. Clearly, it says, Srimad Bhagavatam says that I, Srimad Bhagavatam, will cut through all kinds of nonsense to come to the point of real pristine dharma. I'm not going to give any suboptimal philosophy. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam declares at the very outset in the second verse. So Srimad Bhagavatam is factual and full of substance. Later on, in another verse also, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. Yasmin prati shlokam abaddhavati api. Okay. In that verse, Prabhupada writes, this Srimad Bhagavatam will give revolutionary messages, which will bring radical messages, which will bring out a revolution in the lives of a misdirected civilization. So Srimad Bhagavatam gives predominance to substance over form, and Srimad Bhagavatam is very revolutionary in one sense for the person who is a typical materialist. So, we find that Srimad Bhagavatam repeatedly is teaching us, do not go by the externals of a devotee. Otherwise, we may commit Vaishnava offense, as Prabhuji was mentioning yesterday. And we will lose the opportunity to learn from such personalities. And if you see, Srimad Bhagavatam is replete with conversations between an apparently very unassuming person and a very, very exalted person. Throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, we will see this trend again and again and again. At the very first canto itself, we see a very exalted personality who is almost like a beggar speaking to the king, emperor of the world. Who is that? Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. So similarly, like Jada Bharat and Rahuguna, we see that similarity in Srimad Bhagavatam at the very outset. So Sukadeva Goswami, in fact, when he was approaching the arena to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, he was being chased by women and children. The women were thinking he's a madman, and the children were actually throwing stones. They were ridiculing him. They were thinking, "What? Who is this?" They were actually enjoying the madness of Sukadeva Goswami, thinking that he was an ordinary man. But then, when he came to the arena, then who was sitting? The who's who of spiritual world were sitting there. Narad Muni, Vasishtha Muni, everybody was sitting there. All of them stood up when Sukadeva Goswami came, and then all of them were offering their pranams to Sukadeva Goswami. And then these ladies and children, they were thinking, hang on, just like, you know, I had that experience, you know, I was saying, nice meeting you. And then I saw 20 buses, people waiting, and I realized, my goodness, who was I standing with here, right? So they were thinking, who was this person who we are ridiculing? All these sages, great personalities, and the person who is our king, the emperor, our own emperor is now paying dandavat pranam to this person. And what were we doing with this person? They suddenly realized that. So therefore, saints, Prabhupada says, saints can be recognized immediately by other saintly persons, because the saintly persons, they master the art of physiognomy. So when they see, they realize. A Mahan can recognize another Mahan. Even though their glories are kind of hidden
on the surface of it. So when Srimad Sukadeva Goswami, when he entered the arena, all the sages got up. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, in chapter 19, text 30, describes this moment. It says, Grihar Arksha Tara Nikarai Paritai. Which means Sukadeva Goswami was surrounded by these great saintly personality, sages and demigods, just like a moon was surrounded by stars. A moon is surrounded by stars, planets and other heavenly bodies. This is the description given. His presence was gorgeous and he was respected by all. So Srila Prabhupada writes a very beautiful purport. Prabhupada says, Sukadeva Goswami was not known as a Brahma Rishi. He was not known as a Rajarishi, nor was he known as a Devarishi, nor was he an incarnation like Narad was, like Vyasadeva was, or as Parshuram was. Right? And yet, he was none of this. And yet, he excelled them in terms of everything. And all respects was paid to this Sukadeva Goswami. And Prabhupada concludes saying that this means that the devotee of the Lord is more honored in the world than the Lord himself. One should therefore never minimize the importance of such exalted personalities, seeing them by their externals. Again, in Canto 4, we see the same kind of situation happening when Prithu Maharaj is being glorified by his subjects, the Vandis and the Magadis. They are glorifying Prithu Maharaj. And then Prithu Maharaj, you remember, Prithu Maharaj makes that very humble statement. He says, let me achieve something, then you'll glorify me. Why are you glorifying me before I've achieved anything like that? So he's very humble. But amidst all this glorification, now you can imagine the emperor of the world, Prithu Maharaj, is being glorified by everyone, and then four naked children are walking into the room. Right? Now somebody will say, what is this? You know, wear your clothes and come. What is this? You know, like that. But when these four children are coming, who are they? The four Kumaras. They are entering the assembly. Prithu Maharaj from far off is able to see substance over form. He realizes this. Immediately what he does, he pays pranam to them and he pours water on their feet and then he takes the water on his head. So this is a Mahan realizing four Mahans who have entered. So Srimad Bhagavatam 4.22.7 captures this moment where Prithu Maharaj says, my dear great sages, you are auspiciousness personified. It is very difficult for even the mystic yogis to see you people. It is difficult for them to see you. Indeed, you are very rarely seen. I do not know what kind of pious activity I have performed for you to grace me by appearing before me without difficulty. And later on, he sells another famous verse, which is a key memory verse in Bhakti Vaibhav. Vyalayala Dhruma Vaiteshu Arikta Akhila Sampada Yad Grihas Tirtha Padiya Pada Tirtha Vivarjitaha. So he says that anyone who considers you people just because you are looking like this and who does not invite you to their house and does not worship you people in their houses, such a house is akin to a tree which is infested with venomous serpents. It's a poisonous place. Therefore, your holy feet has to touch such houses. So he's welcoming them with these words into his assembly. So here again we see, somebody who is unassuming, who is somebody having a socially high position, giving respect. Rishabhadev, another example, Rishabhadev was like an avaduta. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.31, it is said, Rishabhadev's external appearance was what? He had curly hair on his head and like a matted brown hair, like a Himalayan yogi, he used to look. Completely disheveled. His body was dirty and not taken care of at all. Like an avaduta he was. And it says, he appeared as if he was haunted by a ghost. And that Rishabhadev, his children were all exalted personality. I mean, socially exalted at least. Spiritually also they were exalted. But socially they had high positions. Kings and all that, right? Brahmanas, kings, scholars, that was his lineage. But they were listening from such a father. He was instructing his 100 sons like that. So we see that in Canto 5. In Canto 7 again we see that. In Canto 7, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.13.10. We see Prahalad Maharaja's meeting with the python man. Again that we see there, that is coming. Now, prior to the Python man, just before, what is the Python man story? Essentially, Narad Muni is talking to Yudhishthira on the principles of various ashramas. Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram. As a part of that, this whole pastime comes and then he tells about Prahlad Maharaj and all that. Right? So, Narad Muni is saying, Avyakta lingo vyaktartho manishi unmata balavat kavir mukhavat atmanam sadrishtya darshayen nanam. He says, although a saintly person, please hear carefully, although a saintly person may not expose himself to the vision of human society, by the behavior of such a saintly person, his purpose is disclosed. To human society, the saintly person, he is giving principles of sannyasa ashram. That's why he is speaking this. To human society, such a person should present himself like a restless child. And although he is greatest thoughtful orator, he must present himself like a dumb man. Mukham karoti vachalam pangum langayate giram. Yat kripa tamma mande shri guru dinatarinam. A saintly person, a sannyasi, always has this mood that I am a fool, but I am carrying your order, my dear Lord. I am just your servant. So please make me speak the way you want. Prabhupada also wrote that, you know, Markine Dharma, you know, in the boat, Prabhupada wrote that. I don't know why my Lord, what qualifications do I have, what am I going to do, where are you sending me, but you come, you make me dance like your puppet. So like that, this is the mood of a saintly personality. So in verse 19, in the same chapter, canto 7, chapter 13, Prahlad Maharaj studied the bodily features of the saintly person. This is when he meets the Avadhuta Brahman. He is hearing Narad Muni's instructions are always there to Yudhishthira. But Prahlad Maharaj, when he sees the Avadhuta Brahman, it is said that he studied the bodily features of the Avadhuta Brahman, and through the physiognomy of that person, Prahlad Maharaj could understand that this is not a lazy person who is just an ordinary beggar who is lying on the street, just living at the mercy of society. But actually, here is a very intelligent man who is expert, although he was apparently lying on the ground doing nothing. Finally, in 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which we are currently also studying in our Bhakti Vedanta course, King Yadu, again, you can imagine, the head of the Yadu dynasty, King Yadu is talking about 24 gurus that he has learnt from. And, you know, one of his gurus is a prostitute. How many of us will go and learn spiritual instructions from a prostitute? But King Yadu is learning from a prostitute. This is amazing, right? So we see all these people here. There is one very high personality and another is socially an outcast, or apparently seems so, but these people learn from them. So several examples are there, even of very exalted personalities hearing not from even human beings. At least the people who we spoke were human beings, no? Kumaras were human, no? In one sense they were jivas. Then, you know, Avadhuta Brahman was also a jiva. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, we are encouraged to hear even from animals. We hear exalted instructions from Gajendra. We hear exalted instructions from Bharat Maharaj when he was a deer. We hear exalted instructions even from a person who had a Rakshasa body. Asuri, who is that? Vritasur. We hear that in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam in that sense again and again hammers this message: give importance to substance over form. This is a revolutionary thinking, but Srimad Bhagavatam is bringing us to that thought. So, in summary, size, stature, and external appearance is not an indicator of the advancement of someone. His Holiness Adhanath Swami Maharaj gives a very good example in Journey Home book. He says, when Maharaj says that when he was meditating on the Himalayas, then one day what happened? He saw a very strong, well-built European man was coming with grocery. He was carrying a lot of grocery. And then what happened? As he was coming, very well-built European man. Maharaj said he can, you know, handle 50 people like that. You know, when he punches, I think many people will, you know, he can handle like that. Very strong. But what happened? Monkeys accosted him. And the monkeys were menacingly looking at him and making noises. Initially what happened, he was startled, but then he put on a bold thing and he was standing like this, no, with a stick or whatever that he had in his hand. He was standing and he was trying to put on a very brave front. But then eventually what happened,
As the monkey started coming near to him, what happened? He dropped all the grocery and he ran away from there. And the monkeys had a nice time taking away the grocery, right? And immediately thereafter, in 5 minutes from there, another boy came. He was thin, you know. He had nothing with him. Okay? He was just thin. He had some stick in his hand. But when he showed that to the monkeys, they all dropped everything and ran away from him, right? So he says, if you compare the physiognomy of both, one was hattakatta, stout European, very strong man. Another was, nothing. But the monkeys were afraid. So he says, because the monkeys also, so we should not have that monkey's mind. Actually, in their wisdom, the monkeys should have known that the stout man is the one who can do more harm. This fellow cannot do anything. But the monkeys went by external physiognomy. Another example is given of a tailor. Once a son saw that the father, who was a tailor, he was cutting cloth. You know how tailors cut the cloth very fast. And then he was trying to take, he threw the scissors somewhere and he was taking the needle from his head and then he was sewing. And whenever he took that thing, he was throwing it on the floor, taking it whenever he needed, cutting, throw it. So son asked, "Daddy, this needle which is so small, you are keeping on your head. And that scissor which is so big, and obviously it is more expensive. When you go to Bunnings, scissor will cost probably what, $5 at least? Needle will cost someone. They'll say, oh, take it. No, it has fallen down, you can even take it and come out, right? It's free, right? So he said, you are giving more importance to the needle than the scissor, why? And the father told him, needle is more important. I mean, he was speaking philosophically, he was giving a lesson to the son. Scissor divides, whereas needle unites. So this was the principle. So do not go by external utility of something like that. So though ordinary and assuming, the sadhu's words are very, very powerful. Why these sadhu's words are powerful? Because titikshava karunika suhruda sarvadehinam ajata shatravah shanta sadhavah sadhu bhushanah. These sadhus don't have anything to do with material world. They don't want your money, they don't want your fame, they don't want your respect, they don't want you to bring some water and worship their feet. They are not looking for puja and pratishtha. Trinadapi sunichena taroriva sahishnuna amanina manadena ketanya sadahari. That is their mood. They only want to give to you out of your compassion. That's what we have all been advised to understand. They want to give to us. So they don't want anything. Therefore, when they don't want anything, they don't have to pamper our ego or pander to our own idiosyncrasies. They don't have to do anything of that. Sadhu means to cut. So they will come and give cutting instructions because their only goal is to save us from the horrible cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. So however unassuming they may be on the exterior, go by their realizations, go by their experience, go by their words. Do not judge them on externals and do not do useless, pointless arguments with them. So this is a nice theme that is coming across in this section between the when you really study the dialogue between Jada Bharat on one hand and Maharaj Rauguna on the other. So I will stop here and we have 5 more minutes. Any questions, comments, corrections? So the question Mahatma Prabhu is asking, to which I know he knows the answer, still for the benefit of everyone and for my own purification. What are the components of surrender? So surrender has got many components. Anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam, rakshishyati sa vishwaso, goptritve varanam tatha, karpanya atma nivedanam. These are various components of surrender. So Prabhupada has given a very practical regimen for us on what we should do to surrender. So he clearly says, anukulyasa sankalpa. Take in everything in your life which is conducive to your Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada also translated in Nectar of Instruction what it means. Utsaha nischaya dhairya tat tat karma pravartana sangatyaga satovrite sadbhir bhaktir prasidyati. So 6 things that enhance our devotional life. Accept all those things. Be enthusiastic in devotional life. Follow the 4 regulative principles. Do not follow 4 regulative principles for the sake of following 4 regulative principles. Do it as an outpouring of affection towards the Lord. Chant the holy names. Associate with devotees. Sangat yagat sato vritte. Follow in their footsteps. So this is a symptom of one aspect of surrender. And that is where the component of Guru Pada Ashraya comes. Following in the footsteps. of saintly personalities. Then pratikulyasya varjanam, avoid whatever that is unfavorable. What are those? Atyahara prayasacha prajalpo niyamagraha janasangascha laulyamcha sadbir bhaktir vinashyati. Atyahara, atyahara means what? Eating more than required, accumulating more than required. So control the tongue, because the tongue, the belly and the genitals are on the same line, and therefore our head is also on the same line. So whatever you put on the tongue will affect everything. Therefore be discriminating when, in terms of what you put in your tongue. Be discriminating of what you eat, when you eat. Vrishnivamsa Prabhu was telling me that with every morsel when we eat, we should chant the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. When you are chewing also, you chant the holy names. That's how we must, you know, take every morsel of food. In that consciousness, if we take that, I am honoring Krishna Prasadam. So these are all, you know, things which have been told to us, like that. So, pratikulyasa varjanam. Rakshishiti sa vishwaso. Goptritve varanam tatha. Goptritve varanam tatha means, have full faith that the source of our income is not the source of our maintenance. It is not our office that because of which we survive. It is because Krishna gives us abilities, therefore we are able to work in our office, and therefore we are able to survive. So it's Krishna who is the maintainer, because Krishna is the ability in man. So our income is not coming from our office. Our income is coming because Krishna has ordained that income, and incidentally it is coming through our office. So when a devotee understands this, then we understand the principle of Goptritve Varanam Tatha, that it is actually Krishna who is the maintainer. Rakshishyati sa vishwaso. Have full faith that Lord Krishna is the protector. Okay, we cannot protect anyone. We cannot protect our near and dear ones from getting diseases. We can't do anything. We can just sit and watch. That's all. The whole thing in front of our eyes. That's all. And then all we can do is pray to the Lord. That's all. We can do our little bit. But ultimately, it is only the Lord's desire. Mahatma Prabhu often tells this verse in our Bhagavatam class. Your favorite verse. What is that? Rakhe Krishna. Mareke, Mare Krishna, Rakeke. So if Krishna wants to protect, he will protect. But if he wants to, you know, but he can give any kinds of lessons to us. Okay. To affect something, some plan which we cannot see right now in our life. So that is an aspect of surrender. But it is said, Tathenu Kampam Sushimikshamano. If a devotee goes through all these hurdles, not blaming the Lord, not giving up the devotional life, right? Thinking that I deserved more, but this is just a token reaction. Being grateful to the Lord for the opportunity of devotional life in this lifetime, then jiveta yo mukti pade sa daya bhak. Such a person becomes a rightful claimant to liberation. So that is another aspect. Rakshishyati sa vishwaso. Goptritya varanam tatha. Karpanya. Karpanya means humility. Humility. Humility will only come. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj always says, humility is a manifestation of gratitude. Humility will only come if we are grateful to other devotees for whatever they have affected in our lives. Humility and gratitude are two sides of the same coin. We cannot be humble if we don't remember our dependence on other devotees. If we think we are independent, then that is a sign of arrogance. Okay. Even if we think that I am only meant to serve others, I don't need anybody's services, then that is also arrogance. That's another type of arrogance, that I will only keep serving others. I don't need anybody's services. But actually we are interdependent. So if we understand the interdependence, okay, because what happens, if we think that I will only serve, then we can go alone also. But if we truly know that my devotional life is dependent on my being in this congregation, in the association of these devotees, then that is one aspect of humility, saying that I am dependent on everyone. I need help, and I also want to serve in some small way. That is interdependence. That is karpanya, humility. And then atma nivedanam. Atma nivedanam means what? That my existence verily is for the purpose of Lord Krishna. If we decide that I don't have any purpose, every breath that I take, every move that I make, it's like a song the Police had many years back. Every breath you take. So every breath we take, every move we make, if it is for the purpose of the Lord's pleasure, then that is Atma Nivedanam. Wherein we are surrendering our whole Atma, soul to Him. So every dharma of the Atma, everything that we execute as a spirit soul, that execution of that activity is only for the pleasure of the Lord. So these six symptoms are together called as surrender. So if someone says, simply surrender, Prabhuji, that means he has to do the six items, right? And the person who says also should have been doing all these things. Like that. Is that okay, Mahatma? Thank you. Anything else? Any? Yes, Mataji. We cannot talk about Krishna when? Yeah. So, maths and science, English, okay, studies. Oh, sorry, the question is that when we are doing, you know, school subjects and all, we cannot think about Krishna. We talk about, you know, English, we talk about mathematics, etc. Now, this is very, you know, in one sense, in the simplest way of answering this question is, today, when we talk, when we introduce Devamrit Swami, how do we introduce Devamrit Maharaj? How do we introduce him? He studied in Yale University. Why do we say that? Why can't we just say, here is Devamrit Swami Maharaj. He has been in the ISKCON movement. You know, he is a highly surrendered devotee. And he is one of the stalwart preachers of Krishna Bhakti. We can say all this in the boat cruise. But what happens when they say, he studied at Yale University. You know, people will get up and listen. Yale University. Okay. When you think of Gaurang Prabhu, what comes to your mind? IIT Bombay. When you think of Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, what comes? Princeton University. Right? When you think of Radhesham Prabhu, what comes? IIT Gold Medalist. Right? So therefore, this is answered best in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text Number 34. We studied that in our Bhakti Vaibhav. It is Chatushloki of Srimad Bhagavatam. The second verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Rite ritam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta cha atmani tad vidya atmano mayam yatha bhasho yatha tamaha. Maya is only that of which you cannot see a connection with Krishna. Otherwise there is nothing called as material in this whole existence. Material, the word material is only because we cannot see the connection of those studies to Krishna eventually. Tomorrow, if you study your maths and English very nicely, if you become a doctor, would you then like to, treat His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj and make him all right? Would you like to do that? How will you get admission into medicine if you don't study properly? Right? So many doctors are involved in assisting devotional. Whole Bhakti Vedanta hospital is there, which is treating Maharajas. If all of them, could not see the connection of their education with Krishna, how could it be possible? Yes. Just if you say, I want to do my maths and English so that I become first in my school, I will get gold medalist, I will become known as the most famous doctor in this whole world, I will study in Harvard School of Medicine, which is the best for medicine, right? If we do that, then it is called as karmi, then that is material. But if we have a long-term goal that whatever education that I get, I will use whatever I derive from my education, that credibility, to go out and give Krishna consciousness. English, for example. Don't you think the better, if you get a better and better, get a better and better grip on the English language, do you think you can be a very good instrument in Western preaching? Which is what Prabhupada wanted. If we don't know English, how can we do Western preaching? Because we don't have the purity of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was not a very excellent English speaker, but Prabhupada had purity on his side, right? So when absolute purity is there, then the reliance on skills can be that much lesser. But when absolute purity is not there, material skills do play their part. No? So like that. So whenever you study English and mathematics, think like this. Is it okay? Yeah? Okay. Yes, Prabhu. So the question is, when any relatives are there, and if we have half knowledge, not a mature amount of knowledge. How do we approach our relatives? Okay. So this is very good, actually. The intention of ours to give Krishna consciousness to our relatives, that must be preserved, because that is a very good asset. Okay, that is what is serving Srila Prabhupada's movement. Yara deke tareka Krishna upadesh. So we can do it with our relatives. However, we have to understand this, that we have to build a solid relationship with people before we give Krishna consciousness. Okay, without building a relationship, nobody is going to listen to us. Okay. Now, initially, so with relatives, we may have good relationship. If we have bad relationship, obviously they are not going to accept from us. Okay. Right. But even if we have a good relationship, there is one more very important aspect. They should see us happy in Krishna consciousness. It is said that a happy customer is the best salesman. Unless we are happy in our Krishna consciousness, people will say, hang on, I always see you very happy. You don't have even 10 rupees in your pocket. You don't have any bank balance. How come you are so happy? What is that wealth that you have? And then you say, actually it is Harinam. And then they'll say, even I want to be happy like you, man. I have all these crores of rupees in my bank account. I'm miserable right now. Right? So a happy devotee is the best salesperson of Krishna consciousness. So if you are happy, automatically your relatives will be drawn to you. If you are happy, it will also reflect in your behavior towards them. Okay. We get angry only usually because material anger, whether we are attached to something or we are envious about something. Okay. So when you are happy, you will also not be attached, very attached. Happiness comes from detachment, right? So so one is be happy, another thing, be detached from your when you are preaching. Don't get too attached. Main isko devotee bana ke rahunga. In next 24 hours, this fellow, if he doesn't chant the holy names, I will throttle him. No, I'll punch you if you don't chant. I told you all the Bhagavad Gita verses. How dare you don't? No, I said, I am doing it. You rascal, you can't do it. No, it will never happen like that, right? So we have to be patient. So patiently, think about your early days in Krishna consciousness. Okay, did we all chanting 16 rounds on the first day? One satsang. Chant 16 rounds. Okay, Prabhuji. Mala, Prabhuji. No, attentively. Yes, Prabhuji. From tomorrow. Did it happen like that? All fast. Next day, Paramahamsa coming out. No, it did not happen like that. So, remember our own days. When we remember our own days, then we will know also that somebody was patient with me and worked with me is the same thing it is going to work with them also. No different. So, then your own realizations which you derive from your own journey of coming into Krishna consciousness, you can apply those realizations in the same way of what worked with you, and then it will definitely work with others also. For example, once I was asking Govind Prabhu, okay, who is one of the devotees, you know, senior devotees in India. So I was asking him that what works with children? Okay. So Govind Prabhu was telling me what worked with you. Were you encouraged to do something when your parents told you, you rascal, idiot, so many times I told you, you know, to do this, study nicely, you know, be disciplined in life. Like that, when they told you, did you get inspired to change yourself? I said, no, I only got scared. I never got inspired. But then what inspired you? When they appreciated you, hey, you did a very nice job. You know, now what, you know, you have attained very good till here you have done. I'm sure you can do a little bit more better and I'll help you. What helped you more? When you got third rank, one slap, why you didn't get first rank? Did that help you? Or glorification, super, very good, I'm very proud of your achievements, you got third rank, okay? If you do a little bit more, you can come first also, like that. What helped you? You have the intelligence, you have the potential, why don't you do it? How can mama and daddy help you? Like that. So I said, yes, obviously the second one helped, okay? So then what do you think why do you think something else will work for others? Why do you think some other tactic will work for your children? Same thing you do. You praise them, whatever they are doing. Like that. Glorify them genuinely for whatever they are doing. Of course, don't flatter. There is a difference between flattery and praise. Flattery is what we used to do when we had to, you know, for people who want flattery. You know. For example, one student was there in my college. We used to say, yaar, toh Salman Khan jaise dikhta yaar. And he said, yeah, achha, such. Like that. He used to come like that. We used to call him Salman Khan. He was nowhere looking like that. Okay, but we used to pull his leg, you know, because he thought he was looking like that. So this is called flattery. Telling someone something which you don't mean at all. Right? But glorification is something which comes from the heart. Genuine praise. Which acknowledges the small efforts that person has put. And that way, in connecting them heart to heart, they will see the genuinity of our praise also. And then they will want to change. So that is what will work. Sorry, it's 9:10 now. So I just have to keep the temple rules. So I'll stop here. If any other questions are there, we can end the Bhagavatam class and we will discuss offline. Okay. Grantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.